Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
KMOX at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking the Good Gardening Stroll shortly, but right now you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with ideas, questions, comments, or concerns that you may have. And Mr. Kelly, before you take off.
Yes.
I'll paint a scenario for you.
Okay.
Okay, it's getting near Christmas time, it's Thanksgiving, and now, when you go to have your kids' pictures taken with Santa Claus, are they still doing that? And will he have a mask on?
No, they're not doing that. They're in their 30s now, so they don't get their pictures taken with Santa anymore.
And how about people that have young kids? That something that's not going to happen?
It's not going to happen this year. We had the story this morning about Eckerd's where they're going to have Santa in a globe. And so I guess you can wave to him, maybe yell at him, I want a toy truck, you know. But yeah, there's not going to be any lap sitting this year.
Well, speaking of Eckerd's, we're going to Eckerd's tomorrow because we, for Thanksgiving, prefer rhubarb pies.
Ooh.
Not rhubarb, strawberry, not anything else.
Just rhubarb.
And that's the only place that we know we can get them anymore.
Really?
We used to get them out of other places, but those places are out of business or shut down or whatever. So
you're going to Eckerd's tomorrow?
Yes. We had to reserve a time.
Yeah, you have to do that. Yeah.
So I'll check out and see if Santa Claus is there in a globe. It's a little bit early.
You do, wave to him. Tell him I said hi and to be nice to me. I tried this year. I didn't always succeed, but I tried to be a good boy.
Yeah, and I was curious, Santa comes down your chimney.
Yeah.
So what do? Put a sign up at the top of the chimney on the roof telling Santa no admittance without a mask.
You must wear a mask, Santa.
So I want to see him come down that chimney with a mask on.
Get a picture if you can.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
How is he going to eat the cookies you leave?
Right.
Yeah.
Or the milk.
Oh, it's even tough on Santa.
Right.
Doggone it.
Oh, screwy times.
Yes, sir. Very much so.
Yes, it is Saturday morning, folks, and we get together and we'll have a discussion about your landscape. And how about your tropicals, your houseplants and everything else? I'm sure they're already inside. If they're not, not necessarily. I've actually a couple houses in my neighborhood where I walk around, they still have some of the angel wing and devil wing begonias still in bloom, not showing any kind of signs of the cold. Still have a couple houseplants that are sitting on their porches. Now, it is somewhat protected, and it's not on the north side of the house or anything else. But it's really kind of surprising that people would just leave stuff like houseplants out. But if you don't have a place inside, you just kind of leave them out until they treat them like annuals and then just get some new ones next year. Should you be doing any pruning, any shearing? Is there still a concern about bugs, whether it be bagworms or something else? And use the information that I share with you, and hopefully it'll make it help solidify your options, with the final judgment of actions going to be on your shoulders for sure. And this is your show, and I appreciate you inviting me into your home, car, or wherever you happen to be listening. Another very important player is Alex. He's producing, and he answers the phone. So when you call, all he needs is your first name and where you're calling from. And because he's way above any kind of gardening stuff, so he doesn't, he doesn't want to hear that stuff anyway. I'm Mike Miller, by the way. I've been hosting Garden Hotline since 1994. I can come to your home and do a landscape consultation if you like. And that's where I walk around, call a walk and talk, and discuss things that you have concerns about. And I keep my eyes open for things that I think could have an impact on your landscape. Today after the show, I'm headed to O'Fallon, Illinois, and going to do a walk and talk. And I do them rain or shine. Sometimes when it's raining, it's not all that fun to be outside walking around necessarily, But it kind of reveals what sort of the problems are or not. And so that's what it's great. So anyway, you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. Email and phone number are there. Email is probably easier way because sometimes the phone numbers and everything, I'm making an excuse for myself. Let's get moving. Today's Good Gardening Stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Massive ginkgo trees. I mean, underneath them, that golden leaves are still looking really cool. There's huge hollies. Multi-trunked maples line the street segment. Robins are singing out nearby. Crows are calling out from the distance. Squirrels are hopping all over the place. A red-berried hedge streaks along. Planter boxes have yews in them. Probably it's a spreading type yew. I don't think it's densiformis. I think it's nigra because they're darker green. There's some iris foliage with the tips are brown, but foliage still looks pretty good. Upright arborvitae and small leaf boxwood run along the frontage, the foundation of this particular building. Well, where am I? Well, I'm in Tower Grove Park. I'm actually at the Piper Palm House, which was constructed in 1878. It's the oldest standing greenhouse west of the Mississippi. It was restored in 1992. Right now, it's filled with tropical plants and on the inside, and chairs are arranged at proper distancing. So I don't know if they used to do some holiday-type stuff there. I don't know if they're going to do that. They used to have buffets. I don't know if they're going to do that, but who knows? There is a sign on the door that says, reminds you, face mask required to come in. Robert P. and Ann C. Stump Plaza fills the space between the Lily Ponds and the Piper Palm House. The water cannas, well, they've been chilled into dormancy. The limestone-edged hydrangea or bed areas, there's other things you're going to see. You're going to see hydrangeas with the brown flower ball still there. Japanese maples, ornamental grasses, which are in massive clumps. There's some clump-growing bamboo, which are somewhat invasive, but not too bad. And it's in the park, so they take care of it. They add some excitement. The Barbara Perry Lawton iris beds celebrate official flower of St. Louis. There are several of those in there. The water lilies, well, so there's some that look pretty good that haven't really been chilled too much. So that's really kind of surprising. And as I start to head back towards the car, a flight of Canada geese, it looks like about 15 or so, are coming to land in the main pond area. And there are lots of runners and walkers and bikers and everything else on this cool Saturday morning. So 314-436-7. What is that number? I can't even remember anymore. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Have any questions or concerns? Give us a call.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. First caller of the day is Mike. Mike, how are you today?
I hope you can understand me because I'm talking into a mask, okay? Yes. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hello? Oh, yeah. I was cut some of my leaves, you know, and ground them as mulch. My neighbor said too much of that's bad. I thought it's natural fertilizer. So what's your, you know, I didn't think it hurt. Well, what's your recommendation?
Well, it's, you know, it's fine just so it's fine just so it's not too deep. But no, that's right. Exactly. I mean, that's what leaf mulch is basically shredded leaves. And if, like exactly. I said, if you don't pile them up too deep, then it's perfectly fine.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure. And now let's go to Jim. And Jim lives in Wildwood. Hi, Jim.
Good morning, Mike. My question's on boxwoods.
Okay.
I've got a lot of blotches. They start off very mild, turning from green to tan, and then they go tan, and then they lose their leaves. And the blotches are about 6 to 8 inches in diameter. What have I got, and what do I do, and when do I do it?
Well, boxwood are pretty much disease-free. I mean, there are a few things that could impact them. Is this areas that have been pruned recently?
No.
No.
In fact, this started about 3 months ago.
Hmm. How about Are they the boxwood close to the sidewalk or a street or something where dogs kind of urinate?
Between no dogs. It's between a house and a sidewalk or whatever. Nothing like that.
Yeah, and this is on the front side, not on the back side, then.
North side of the house.
Not this on the side of the house. Boy, I'll tell you, I don't really know. I mean, it's got to be something, I would think, physical as opposed to some, because, like I said, the boxwood are pretty much disease-free. If the rest of the shrub looks healthy and, dark green, you're just getting these little isolated circumstances, and you haven't pruned them or anything else, that's a very difficult one. I can't even guess.
It's not winter blotched. The only thing I see is kind of a very light, I'll call it spider web type thing. That's about it.
Yeah, spider webs are not that problematic. Spider mites could be problematic, but spider mites are not going to be, prevalent now by any means. They could have been prevalent 3 months ago, but spider mite webbing, it goes in between just the stem and individual leaves. It doesn't, let's say, consume whole big areas.
Yeah, this is consuming, like I say, 6 inches in diameter or
right.
Whatever.
Yeah,
I sprayed a little seven on it the other day, and I thought, well, I'm going to wait till spring.
Right. Yeah, there's not really too much you can do, and I can't come up with anything that I could think of that would be impacting them like that. So, sorry.
All right. Appreciate the thought.
Sure. More lack of thought.
Take care.
Yeah, it's, boxwood are like, I have some in my yard, and, like I said, in front of Piper Palm House, they have the small leaf boxwood there. And I didn't see any kind of boxwood just in general don't have disease problems much at all. Let's go over to Andy's yard. Hi, Andy.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for being on my show.
Sure.
Hey, I got a question for you. I've got two enormous sweet gumball trees. They're both a great canopy, and they're a scourge. 9 months out of the year, it's those sweet gumballs.
Right.
But this week, I've noticed, and I know it's been windy, both these massive trees have really been dropping a lot of the green sweet gumballs. So they don't normally ever do this. They wait till they're brown and they drop. So I don't know if I should be concerned about them or if this is just maybe the warm weather, the wind, and all that stuff.
Yeah, I think it's probably related more to Mother Nature than it is anything. Because, those are really seeds, so they really are not going to, if they don't have to, for whatever reason, drop those sweet gum balls when they're green because they're not mature seeds, and they're really trying to self-perpetuate themselves. So it has to be just, related to the wind and things along that line.
Okay, that's my main concern. I wanted to make sure there wasn't something, going on, like a disease or something like that, but... Okay, well, that answers my question.
Yeah, generally, there's not going to be a disease that causes, let's say, sweet gum balls to drop prematurely. So it has to be something physical, temperature-wise, wind-wise, and things along that line.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Yep. And if 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Dolores, how are you today?
I'm fine this morning, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
Good. I have a Japanese maple in the corner of my backyard. I live in Afton. Something this past week got into the Japanese maple and has chewed the bark. I mean, these are big spots. Couldn't possibly be a deer. Has to be a squirrel. The problem is I'm afraid I'm going to lose this tree now because there's so many areas that they've chewed on. Is there anything I can put over the wounded areas of the tree to keep it from dying?
No, there's nothing. Days of old, those sealers and things like that, wound sealers, had lead in them, but that's been taken out a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's just cosmetic. All you can do is if you see some frayed bark where it's been chewed, is just take a razor blade knife and make it as...
They took care of it for me. It's all laying at the bottom of the tree.
Really? Wow.
Yes. I mean, there are some areas that are even a foot long where they have stripped the bark off the tree.
You're kidding.
No, and the tree is 20-something years old because it was here when we moved in.
I don't think a squirrel would be doing that kind of stuff. You know, to be honest.
What else could it be? Raccoons or possums?
It has to be some kind of wildlife, but I don't think it's squirrels. You know, and, you know, I mean, to the advantage, usually animals don't chew on stuff just for the sake of chewing unless there's something as a result that they need, and bark is not something that's going to give them too much.
Well, it doesn't look like they ate it. It looks like they just
stripped it off
the tree and left it laying on the ground. Because that's what I first noticed was the raw woods laying on the ground. And then when I looked up into the tree, I thought, holy Moses, there's one area that's got to be at least 12 inches long.
Jiminy.
Around the entire branch.
Right.
So you don't think there's anything I should do with it?
No, if there's any kind of frayed bark or anything like that, get rid of that. But, boy, this is disastrous. And is this just on the lower part of the trunk or is this higher up?
No, it goes all the way up. Well, I would have to say it's probably on the first 6 feet, but not the first 3 feet. But it goes all the way up to at least 6 feet high.
Wow.
There's a telephone pole nearby, and there's wires nearby, and I've always had squirrels.
Right.
But that's all I've ever seen in my backyard.
You know, that's absolutely a mystery. So.
Yeah, it sure is. I don't know what else could have done that except, like I said, unless it was a possum or a raccoon.
Yeah, and they're not so much bark chewers.
No, I wouldn't think so either. Well, okay, maybe I need to buy a camera, huh?
Yeah, right.
one of those video cameras that
exactly.
they use for deer hunting. Okay, well, thank you so much, Mike. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay, bye-bye.
Boy, oh boy, that's what, three questions I didn't know the answer to? Uh-oh. No, don't ask any more questions. I probably don't know because I'll get fired. Anyway, let's head over to Tom's yard. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Mike. Good morning. How you doing?
Very good.
Hey, I got a question that you're going to know the answer. I got three dwarf spruces that are about 18 years old, and they're real fat. I mean, they're huge. If I trim them suckers, they're going to be bald. That's the end of them, isn't it?
Pretty much, yes. Because if you look inside of them, you've got about a 6-inch area maybe that has needles on it, and then the rest of the stem going back to the trunk and everything else has no needles at all. And if you cut it back to the point where there's no needles, then there's no buds along there to make needles anymore.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to get rid of them then, I guess. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay.
Sorry when you have nice, robust growth, but things overgrow the spot, then there's not too much else you can do. So if you do have any questions, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. This is a good time of year to walk through your landscape or your garden space or whatever and take some notes on what has been really successful on this nutty year and what has been very difficult or what you haven't had. Let's say, the aesthetic value of the particular plant that you anticipated. And, I mean, I've had an email occasionally from somebody that's, they bought a particular plant and they've put them in and, they're perennials and they didn't flower this year. Well, you're probably lucky that things like perennials don't flower in the first year because you want the root system to get established. So, consequently, no flowering is good. So when you're planting perennials, you're planting for a long-term run, and instant gratification is not what you really are after. So if you want instant gratification and you want perennials, fine. Get the perennials, plant those. They may flower, but you're probably, you should just go ahead and cut the flowers off the first year anyway. But then to get some gratification, get some annuals and plant those in among the perennials. To give you that color in that spot, that's the best thing you can possibly do. So, Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We do have some phone lines open. This year has been just totally wild. If you remember how wet the spring was, and then we had the dry summertime, and now we're having temperatures yesterday and a couple days before that, I thought it was like May. except when you're walking around, you're seeing a lot of the trees were already defoliated. But this is so strange, you know, to not have. We've had 2 days where Christie Park, which is across the street, there's been obvious frost on the ground, but that's been it. And here we are in mid-November, past mid-November. So this is just getting really, really crazy. Let's head over to Paul's yard. Hi, Paul. How are you?
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Very good.
So I have a profusion crab apple tree in my front yard. My front yard is full of zoysia. And I didn't think it was going to, it looked like it was dying in the springtime, but then it started coming out with some foliage, and then in the summertime it just looked kind of dull. And I don't know if it's something that I could go ahead and feed now, the root system, or is it where I'm weed eating the mound where the tree is that I might be clipping some of the roots?
If you were clipping the roots, do you have mulch over the area that you have?
Very fine mulch, yes.
Yeah.
But
so,
I can see some roots exposed.
Yeah, but I mean, you would actually see the raw area where generally a weed eater is not going to be able to do too much damage to the root system. And if it is, it's going to be more cosmetic than it is actually detrimental. So how old is this tree?
Well, it's at least 12 years old.
Yeah, so that might be more of a factor than anything. Especially, you know, with the, like I was just talking about, the weather this year being so oddballish that, you know, the age plus the weather, you know, could be causing the, you know, sort of the downhill slide.
So you don't think injecting any type of food now into the root system, like around the tree weeping area, would help?
No, probably what I would do is if I was going to do anything is I'd get an electric drill, get an earth auger, which is a drill bit about an inch, and auger holes, concentric holes, and circles around, starting about halfway out from the trunk to the extension of the branches, the drip line, and then backfill those with compost. So in other words, you're going to feed the soil, and then the soil's going to feed the tree, as opposed to trying to directly feed the tree with some kind of fertilizer.
Install compost in those holes.
Right, exactly. So go drill down about 6 inches, you know, with each hole, and then backfill that with compost.
All right, sounds great, Mike. I appreciate it.
Yep, good luck with that. Yeah, I mean, age can have a, especially when you get some of these advanced type hybrids, that, I mean, the age factor steps in, you know, like it depends upon the individual plant, but there is an age factor that's going to play a big role. Let's head from Paul's over to Mary's yard. Hi, Mary. She lives in Belleville.
Hi, Mary. I'm sorry. Hi, Mike. Sorry. I'm very nervous. I'm sorry. Thank you for calling my show. I got that in, too.
All right.
Okay. I heard you're having kind of a bad day, and I've been thinking since June that I wanted to call you about this issue, but I didn't want to give you a bad day.
Ah.
So since you're already having one, I'm going to add to it, okay?
Okay, perfect.
All right. Okay, when I called in April and I asked some advice about my boxwoods, I wanted to cut them down. They were close to 5 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to cut them down, like, to a foot or 18 inches. And you kind of told me, no, I can't do that. That's cutting too much off and they'll die. Well, I decided to try it with one of them. And I did, and it has come back since April when I cut it down. And it is big and bushy and full. And it's only about maybe 2 feet high now, which is where I want it. But all the stems inside, all the big pieces, they've all come up with new growth, and they just look perfect.
Wow.
It just looks perfect. So I have now, since that time, cut the other four of them down. It was later in the season, but I'm anxious to see if they're going to come back in the spring.
Right.
And I will call you back and let you know.
That sounds perfect.
Okay?
Yeah,
I just
good
wanted to let
I mean,
you know that.
Usually yeah, that, you know, you got, yeah. Everything was just, you know, absolutely right, weather-wise and other things. because I've seen them cut down and no recovery whatsoever. So
I understand, and I take your advice on 99% of the things you say, but on this one, I just had to try it for myself.
Well, that sounds
and
perfect.
And I did, and it worked.
All so, right.
But thank you very much, and I hope I didn't add to your bad day just too much.
You did.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, hopefully next week will be better for you.
Yes. Well, okay. Or just even the rest of the day. Because I'm heading over in your area to, not Belleville, but O'Fallon, Illinois, so they're not next to each other by any means.
I'm actually sitting in O'Fallon right now.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yes, at my daughter's house.
Well, perfect.
Yes. Okay. Well, you have the good rest of your day.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Yep. And now let's go over to Terry's yard. Hi, Terry. Hey, Terry.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hey, an earlier caller talked about problems with their boxwoods. This past winter, I had a row of about 6 boxwoods along the driveway, and I noticed that the face of them closest to the driveway had turned a strange shade of orange. My landscaper said it was from rock salt from the snow removal group, but a couple of my neighbors who use different people had the same issue on the same side of the boxwoods, and it was orange. And I finally ended up having to take them out.
So you're asking me what that potentially could be? How close were they to the concrete of your driveway?
Well, it's blacktop, but they were right on the edge of it.
Yeah.
So and I've had them for 23 years and never had a problem.
Yeah. So again, some of the plants when they get older are going to be impacted. So it was probably reflective heat off the asphalt. It could have been, you know, related to the fact of, you know, a little bit of rock salt. But if your neighbors are having the same circumstance and theirs are kind of the same age, then I would say it's age factor then related to reflective heat off the driveway.
Ah. Neither of which we've considered before. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's go from Terry's yard over to Richard's yard. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hey, the lady who called who thinks the squirrels are chewing the bark off of her tree.
Right.
Well, if it just happened in the last few weeks, it's most likely a big old buck deer rubbing his horns on it.
Yeah, she lives in Afton, and there's not too many deer in Afton. That's why, you know, I understand that could certainly be the case. But Afton, I don't know if there's been deer in that area for decades. But maybe it is. Maybe they're, you know, migrating because of whatever, and that could be the problem.
I thought deer were everywhere. Anyway, this time of the year, they roam far and wide.
Oh, you aren't kidding. They certainly do. We've
okay,
seen them.
Anyway. I just thought that's what it sounds like, what it was.
Yeah, well, thanks for the insight. But, yeah, I thought that initially, but when she said where she lived, you know, I'm not saying that there isn't any deer in there, but, you know, that's kind of the area that we live in. And I have to be honest, now we have seen deer along the River De Pere through in a cemetery and stuff, so it's not to say that they couldn't be there, but it's not something that's going to be a normal circumstance. But thanks, Richard. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
Yep. And 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Holiday season, yes, poinsettias. Yes, we think of those as kind of Christmas-type stuff. What you need to do if you get a poinsettia and it's basically already colored, then you don't have to do anything to it. If it's one that you've been growing as a houseplant and still got, let's say, the green bracts, they haven't started to turn colors yet, you have to put them in complete darkness from like 5 p.m. until, let's say, 6 or 7 in the morning until the, you know, the color starts showing. So that's what you have to do. And, you know, how does that happen? Because these are natural, you know, I mean, they're real plants where they're native to. But anyway, their season is just basically about that much darkness. So that's why the plant, that's what triggers it, and that's why you have to sort of emulate the very same thing in your own landscape. And basically that's what greenhouses do. That's what the botanical garden does, you know, for their holiday season type stuff. So they shut, you know, they shut down to total darkness, some of these areas. So anyway, Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Well, somebody called that lives in Afton, and she says there's lots of deer in Afton. So that shows you I don't know what the heck I'm talking about. So anyway, let's go over to Kristen's. And Kristen, how are you?
Hi. I was wondering about trimming rose bushes this time of year with the wonky weather that we're having. I've been wanting to get out and trim them down. We've got some knockout roses that are about 3 years old, and they're looking really yucky. Is it advisable this time of year, or should I just wait?
No, you could do it now.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no problem. Actually, it's, you know, surprising as I wander around, you know, through my walks and stuff, one in the early morning, then one mid-afternoon. I've seen some knockout roses that are still in flower. It's, like, kind of surprising.
And, I sure wish mine were those. They just don't look good at all.
Yeah, that's, you know, I mean, it's just a nutty time. Speaking of nutty times, not related to roses necessarily, but I was walking by an arbor, and I saw there was clematis that was in flower. Huge white flower, about 4 to 6 inches across. They had like three flowers on it, and it's like, what? I mean,
now,
this is unbelievable.
What do you think these plants are going to be doing in the spring? Do you think they're going to be stunted?
No, I think they'll probably be fine. It depends upon the winter, of course. But, you know, if everything, let's say, is quasi-normal, I don't think, you know, flowering this late in the season is going to have an impact.
Okay. Well, thank you. I love your show.
Well,
I really
thanks.
Do.
And it's your show, as you know.
All right. Have a great day.
Yes. And now let's go to O'Fallon, Illinois, where I'm headed later on today and into Joyce's yard. Hi, Joyce.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Welcome to O'Fallon, Illinois this afternoon. I hope you enjoy your visit.
I will.
Mike, you and I spoke several weeks ago regarding the chipmunk situation here in O'Fallon, Illinois. And I wanted to, two things, give you a little update on our situation. We tried everything that was all natural to dispel those chipmunks, and absolutely nothing worked. And so against my better conscience, we finally got some rat traps and put Velveeta cheese in it, like it said to do, followed the directions, et cetera, and had two of them and set them out. And this is how ingenious these chipmunks are. And the squirrels, too, for that lady in Afton. Don't trust them because they're cousins, and I'm sure they're not trustworthy. They're cute, but they're not trustworthy. So anyway, we set the traps. Put the Velveeta cheese in them and, you know, put them in different places. And this is the truth. I watched the chipmunk take the Velveeta cheese from the trap. He sprung the trap and then took the cheese, flipped the trap over, and gave me the stink eye and took off. That is true. That is the truth. And so we did it again, thinking that, well, that was a fluke. I didn't have it set, you know, trap set correctly. He did it again.
Wow.
So, yeah, chipmunks, you got it. You're on your own. So now, in the last week or so, they're just gone. And so now my question is, pardon me, do they hibernate?
Yes.
Because, I mean, they do.
But they only hibernate basically when it gets to the point where there's nothing for them to eat. So we're getting, even though the weather's warm and everything else, they could be, you know, in hibernation.
Well, that's what they're doing. They're just mounting an attack for the spring. But just advice to our sister listener there in Afton, don't trust those little squirrels. That's probably what that is. They're just trying to you know, fake you out with blaming it on the deer, and that's not working. But anyway, update, chipmunks, just let them have it because they're smarter than we are. Thank you again for taking my call, and we'll look for I'll update you in the spring of the situation out here in O'Fallon.
All right, that sounds perfect. Yeah, thanks
Thank
a
you.
Lot. Yeah, growing up in Ellisville, we had chipmunks underneath our front porch, but my mother liked them. So, I mean, they were just kind of part of the nature aspects of Ellisville. We moved out there in 55. So they were probably living in that area before the houses were built, and then consequently said, hey, this is our property, and we're going to stay here, and you know, we just let them go. It was kind of like both my parents kind of had, let's say, natural type philosophies. My father, anything that was green was good, so we never did any kind of weed control in the yard at all. And then, like I said, chipmunks, my mother thought they were really cute, and I guess they are cute, but and they never did really any major damage to anything. They were somewhat, I guess, aggravating, like the lady who just called. But it's just, you know, there's so many things going on in the outdoors. It's just absolutely unbelievable. So inspect your trees and shrubs. Look at, you know, especially the evergreens like the junipers, and make sure that they don't have any bagworms hanging on them. And if they do have any bagworms, if you don't feel like pulling them off, just take a pair of scissors and then cut them off, or you can cut them in half, because those bags, they really only contain eggs, and if they're exposed, then the weather's going to kill them off. And make sure that you start, you know, cleaning up your perennial beds and things like that, because that's going to reduce potential. In other words, cut the foliage off, get rid of the foliage, any of it that's brown. It's going to reduce potential disease damage and overwintering insects along there as well. And I don't know how much it's going to rain today or this weekend, but you know, moist soil is really crucial for plant materials, root systems to make it through the winter if we have a screwy, cold, extra, you know, crazy winter. So moisture is important. Yeah. Especially for not only you, but the plant material too. So Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after the news.
KMOX and your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, it's the second hour, and that is the tip of the trowel hour. I'll be giving the tip of the trowel shortly, but right now, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Alex will be answering the phone, so just your first name and where you're calling from with your ideas, questions, concerns, or comments. We've had a lot of chipmunk comments and a lot of deer comments. And
chipmunks, huh?
And squirrels. So it's been a rodent-type day, except deer are not really rodents, but anyway. So just a question, not related to kind of you, but is Kevin Killeen doing the holiday radio show this
year?
No,
no holiday radio show.
Wow.
I know. It's like vacation for him.
Wow.
Yeah, because, you know, that's a big deal.
Right.
He's got to start. I think he starts writing that usually around October.
Right, because he writes music earlier, as well as a script.
Yeah.
Jeeman.
So all that talent going to waste.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the talent from KMOX and himself.
And so. Himself, yes. Yeah. So another victim of the coronavirus.
Gosh,
so, yeah, I know. It's a shame.
It's too weird.
It is.
But I'm going to give the tip of the trowel, but I'll give it to you first. People that are putting out the holiday decorations, you know, a little bit early. For the most part, I go, ooh, it's a little early. But, you know, it is nice, you know, to kind of see some bright colors. And thanks to everybody also that did all the Halloween decorations, mm-hmm. too, because it was a very dramatic year with a lot of inflatables.
That can brighten you up.
Right.
Period.
Exactly.
You know? Because I'm that way, too. It's like Christmas decorations before Thanksgiving. No way.
Right.
Last weekend, put some lights up. Yeah.
Yeah. After I get back from O'Fallon on, you know, today, what I'm going to do is we've got all our outdoor stuff in the garage. I'm going to start going through the lights and plugging them in to make sure they work. Because a couple of years ago, we had several strings that were just, they were old and didn't do anything. So
yeah, we've got half of a string that won't light all the time. And I go out there and I kind of flick the lights, you know, and it's like, it doesn't matter which one I hit, but when I hit, there's like three or four that if I hit, they come on. I have no idea what's going on, so I'm going to have to replace those. But yeah, we did the same thing. Plugged them in, they worked, put them up, and half of them didn't. It's like, great. But yeah, we never decorate this early.
Yeah.
And it's like, let's just do it, you know? So yeah, you got to, anything we can do to cheer things up a little bit.
I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And now that, you know, the foliage is going off the trees, that makes it even sort of like, looking out the window here, everything's brown, which I'm glad there's still brown leaves. But in another couple of weeks, they're all going to be on the ground. It's just going to be skeletized trees.
Yeah. So we're depending on you to cheer us up. Bring us some gardening life here.
Yeah.
The pansies are still looking good, though.
Great.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, looking pretty.
Okay, folks, thanks for having me on your show, and we can discuss plant selection, cares for, ups and downs. Your annuals, just like Brian said, his pansies are still looking good. Your bulbs, have you gotten... There's some houses around us that still have their elephant ears in the ground, and some of the elephant ear foliage still looks pretty darn good for this, you know, this time of year. Mine are all dug up, and I actually got them into the basement. I got them in paper bags, took them in the basement, and put them on underneath a workbench. And your ground covers, your house plants, your lawn, perennials, roses, trees, shrubs, vines, or water gardens. When I was at the Tower Grove Park, I was looking at one of the pools. I thought that pool had koi in it, but I didn't see any of the koi, and I was curious if, you know, the water was cool enough that they're all hanging down lower, and I couldn't see them because, when I take my good gardening stroll, it's still pretty dark, so it's a little bit tough to, see sometimes down into the water. But remember, my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path to take, but strictly offered for you to consider. Alex is across the big board. He answers the phone and just your first name and where you're calling from. But he runs the whole show. He pushes the buttons and everything else. During the weeks and on weekends, I do landscape consulting, which I call walk and talks. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, homepage. That's my email address and phone number where you can contact me, and we'll set up a time where I can come to your home and talk to you about your landscape design, plant care, maintenance, and everything else. Tip of the trowel is a special recognition for an individual, group, or a situation that's made an impression on me. Is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Again, it's going against tradition, but the people who do have some seasonal decorations out this early, historically, I would, I go, ooh, but it sort of, you turn a corner and you see some bright lights, down the street, and especially some of the newer lights that are LEDs. They are so bright, and it's, with everything so, getting dull and dull and duller, so... Thanks to all those folks. So we're not going to be putting ours up until after, Thanksgiving. But we do some different stuff as well. So tip of the trowel goes out to everybody who decorates the outside of their home, which shares it with everybody in the neighborhood. Let's get a call or two in before we take a break. And let's go to Wildwood. And that's where David lives. Hi, David.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I have a cool season lawn. And in September, I did the whole core aeration, compost, overseed, and I gave it some starter fertilizer, and it's doing pretty well. What I'm wondering is there anything fertilizer-wise that I should do now before the winter really sets in?
Yeah, there's a winterizer-type fertilizer. You could go ahead and do that.
Okay. Does it have a composition?
Number-wise?
Is it mostly nitrogen? Or?
No. Low nitrogen, phosphorus and potassium. But for the most part, it's, one that's been formulated for feeding cool season lawns late in the season.
And, okay.
Specifics, every company is going to have their own, whether it's Scott's or anybody else. So just, you can go to your favorite garden center and just tell them you want a winter riser and then put that down.
Okay. Will do.
All right.
Great.
Good luck.
Thanks.
With that. Yeah, a successful lawn in Wildwood, that takes a lot of work. But anyway, let's go to Alana. Elena. Elena, how are you?
I'm good.
Go ahead.
I have two large oak trees in my yard.
Mm-hmm.
And, one, they're still holding leaves. But the thing that has me puzzled is that they haven't dropped any acorns this year. Should I be worried about those trees?
No, not at all. They're going to drop them when they want. And I'm sure, I don't know exactly where you live, but aren't the squirrels eating them? Aren't you finding a lot of crumbs of acorns on the ground and everything else?
No.
Really?
That's the thing that's puzzling me. I was working out in the yard and I looked around and I went, there's no acorns. There's no acorn debris. There's no little acorn caps.
Well, maybe this year, your particular trees, they can alter years where they're going to produce more acorns than others, just like other trees produce, fruits or whatever it happens to be. So maybe this was a year for both of them to have low production. And do you have any binoculars? You can just look up in the tree to see if there's any acorns hanging in the tree.
I do have some, and I haven't looked in the tree with them.
Yeah, I would take a look. And so it may be just one of those years where weather-wise and everything else, right when they were in flower, which they have to flower to be able to produce an acorn, which is the result, the weather was just not right and they didn't get pollinated correctly. So you may have minimum amount of acorns.
Okay, another question. Does the fact that it has a lot of those hard ball things, could that have anything to do with it?
Generally not. The galls are, they're problematic from the standpoint, more aesthetic than anything, until you get so many on one branch that the weight of the gall can possibly cause a crack, within where the intersection of that particular branch that has a lot of galls on it connects to the next branch or trunk. But that's, for the most part, the only major problem resulting from the galls. But it doesn't impact really acorn production or foliage production or anything else.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Sure. My pleasure. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, back to the phones we go, and we're headed to Ron's yard. Hi, Ron. Hello, Ron, you there?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I have a Bartlett pear tree. It produces really well, and I wanted to get a start of another one. If I plant the whole pear, should it come up like next spring?
No.
It won't.
You probably won't get any. I mean, growing trees from fruit production like that is going to be pretty much impossible. Best thing you can do is probably go to your favorite garden center, get some rooting hormone, take some cuttings, and then get some potting mix for starting plant material, and roots of cuttings is going to be a better way to do it.
Okay, and what about pecans? Will they possibly come up?
Potentially, but when you think about it, when you see pecans and you see, if they haven't been harvested, how many nuts fall under the ground? And then how many actually germinate is going to be really, really abstract as far as number-wise. And the potential is going to be very limited. And the same, a good example, too, would be with the acorns from the squirrels, planting them. Yeah, there's going to be some that comes up, but the number-wise, from the number of acorns that squirrels dig a hole and then drop them into the hole is really limited.
Okay, back to the pear tree. How do you get the cutting? Just any place, or does it really matter?
Well, basically off the end of the branches, you want about a 9 or 12-inch, twig that you've cut. Make the cut at a 45-degree angle, then dip the end that you've cut into the rooting hormone, and then there'll be instructions on, how to plant it in the potting mix.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Sure, yeah. Growing fruit from, or growing any kind of tree from fruit or a nut or anything else is really, really abstract. So.
Okay, well, thanks.
Sure. And now let's go to Annie's yard. Hi, Annie.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
My question is, I have something boring, a hole next to my landscape bricks. There's no dirt around the outside edge of the hole, but when I put a stick in that hole, it might lead off maybe 4 or 6 inches in one direction or the other. I wonder if you have any idea what that might be.
Could be a couple different things. You have moles in your yard?
No.
No moles.
Moles, no voles.
Yeah, no moles, no voles. My guess is... So does it go straight in or does it bend?
Well, it goes straight in and then it tunnels off to one side or the other.
Yeah, that has...
Could it possibly be a frog?
Nah, frogs, that's too much work for a frog.
Okay.
It has to be some kind of rodent of some sort. So chipmunks or something along that line are doing that.
Okay.
And
never seen a chipmunk, got lots of squirrels.
Yeah. But that's, that's my guess because, like I said, growing up, we had chipmunks underneath our front porch, and they tunneled underneath the concrete pad for our front porch. So,
well, about 3 feet from that hole, my ground has sunk like about 4 inches, and I've filled it in with topsoil. But I just wondered if the two things could be related.
They could be, but, I mean, that's more or less sounds like a mole circumstance, you know, with a combination of those two things together, as opposed to, you know, you said you don't have any moles. Because
yeah, I have no outside indication of moles.
Yeah, because, I mean, moles have two series of tunnels. One is at the surface, that's a feeder, and then another one that goes below that, and that's the one that they take back to their sleeping den. But moles or voles, you know, or chipmunks, has got to be a rodent of some sort.
Okay. Well, I stuffed some rocks into the holes, and now they burrow a hole next to it. Okay, well, thank you for your attention. I appreciate it.
Sure, my pleasure. Now let's go from Annie's to Steve's. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Mike. I have a blood-good Japanese maple, and this year during the growing season, it had leaves on it, but it had a lot of dead limbs on it, too. I cut all the dead limbs out of it later in the year.
Right.
And the limbs that are left now did have leaves on it, but the main trunk, about 4 or 5 foot up from the ground, has split about 4 or 5 up and 4 or 5 foot up towards the limbs. Does that mean that thing's about to go?
Really shouldn't, you know. I mean, the split, is that the side of the tree that faces the sun?
It would be on the, close to the south side.
Yeah, so my guess is probably got sun scald, and that's, you know, it caused the split in the bark. If it's an exaggerated size, you know, I'd be a little bit concerned, but, I mean, it could just be splitting in the bark because barks do split, you know, just with the maturity, the width of the growth as it increases, the diameter will cause splitting in the bark.
Well, some of it's over an inch wide at places.
Ooh, wow. That sounds like sun scald more so than anything.
Does it? So just leave it alone?
Any bark, you know, that you can feel that feels loose, go ahead and cut that off, but other than that, I wouldn't, you know, be overly concerned with it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much then, Mike.
Sure. My pleasure. And bye-bye. Now let's see, where should we head? Oh, let's go to Paul's yard, and he lives in Sunset Hills. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
We live in a medium age subdivision, 15, 20 years old, and a lot of us got ash trees in the front yard.
Ooh.
Because they, you know, back in those days, they didn't get seeds, they didn't grow too fast, they were a nice tree. Well, you know the story with that. So what would be a good choice moving forward? Our criteria are, you know, the sweet gums are pretty, but they get those burrs, and there's all kinds of other ones that will flower and attract the birds and drop a lot of stuff in the flowering season.
Right. Well,
somebody suggested green gables black gum tree.
Yeah, I mean, they're very slow growing, but they have great, fantastic fall color. The leaves are really glossy, you know, during the growing season. And, black gums are really good trees. There's no getting around it.
Anything else you would suggest?
The city's replacing a lot of the ash trees that they've taken out because of the emerald ash borer. They're replacing them with elms that are resistant to the Dutch elm disease, which was, dramatically traumatic for the elm trees back in the 50s and 60s. So that's what the city's replacing their ash trees with.
Oh, okay. They look like the old elms, the low, which had a real crown, almost like 4 feet high.
Yeah, this is an elm tree, right?
Okay, so they don't crown as high as I might like them then.
Right, exactly. But the black gum trees will get, you know, I mean, they can get pretty good size, but it's going to be decades to get that big.
Decades is good. Probably won't be my problem. All right. Thank you.
Certainly, my pleasure. And
bye-bye.
Now let's go to Don's yard. Hi, Don.
Hello.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I have 3 trees. They're cottonwoods, and they're about 80 to 100 feet tall.
Ooh.
And I'm afraid they might be falling on my house. One guy came out and said, well, cottonwoods don't fall, and they're healthy.
They don't fall. Well, maybe the whole tree doesn't fall, but along the greenway that I walk, there's some cottonwoods along there, and some of them have lost some major branches in the last 2 or 3 years.
I had all three of my trees pruned for all the dead branches.
Okay. Yeah, these were ones that I guess were just they weren't, you know, dead branches. These are major branches that had foliage on them that during a windstorm or something, or maybe they got struck by lightning. I don't know exactly what caused it, but I mean, like huge branches that were knocked down. The trees don't fall generally, but that doesn't mean they can't lose some branches.
Yeah, I don't mind them losing branches because I have it pruned whenever necessary.
Right.
I just don't want the trees to fall on my house and break my house.
Yeah, usually they don't. I've never really seen a cottonwood go all the way over.
Great. You made me feel better. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, bald cypress, cottonwood, you know, lots of different, some of the river birch. I have not seen any of those really go over. But, yeah, there are some trees that will go over.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. And why don't we take a break? 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We do have a few phone lines open. But right now, let's head over to Bill's yard. Hi, Bill.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I had several hemlock trees planted along my property line about 3 years ago, and some are thriving and some are dying. What might be the problem there?
Basically, hemlocks don't like our weather. So even though they're for sale, and you'll see some very successful ones, for the most part, like what happened, I don't know the number you put in, but usually you can expect a certain percentage of them just not to be able to survive for whatever reason. They all look healthy. They're all grown in the same production nursery and everything else, but they just don't make it for whatever reason.
So it's weather as opposed to either overwatering or underwatering or a soil condition?
Yeah, if they were planted properly, so in other words, the top of the root ball is above the surrounding ground, so the ones that are, let's say, declining, they haven't sunk, so there's a hole or a depression right around where the trunk is where water could sit. But for the most part, you know, if they've been correctly planted, it's just weather-related more so than anything else.
Is there anything I can do to help some that are just not thriving? They're kind of thin, and as far as fertilizing is concerned?
No, because it's just like, you know, if you're not feeling well or you have a dog that's not feeling well, feeding it is not going to make, you know, it any better.
Okay. All right. I'll take its temperature and see how it's doing.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for that input.
Sure. Yeah, hemlocks, I mean, they're great. They're fantastic. They look good. But boy, oh boy, their longevity, Yeah, I mean, I'm even talking botanical garden. You'll see some fantastic specimens there. But there's been several that have been planted in various locations that just didn't survive. Even under those, I mean, extremely, let's see, ultimate care circumstances. So now let's go to Carol, and she lives in Fenton. Hi, Carol.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
Thank you for moderating my show.
Sure.
So a good friend of mine gave me some black-eyed Susan seed heads. They're dried, and I'd like to start them before I put them in the ground because the yard guys, you know, could walk on them if I just scattered them. So can you tell me, do I just put them in a pot, little fertilizer, a little water? What would I do?
Yeah, I would probably just basically go to your favorite garden center, get some potting mix for starting plants, and just, you know, fill a pot up with it. Put a saucer underneath it so you can keep some humidity and moisture in there, and just lay the seed heads, you know, on the top of the potting mix.
Lay on top. Don't put any soil on top of them.
No, don't bother, because when they drop, you know, naturally in the outdoors,
yeah,
they don't get, you know, they don't get pushed into the ground. So just all of them may not germinate, but put them in a sunny location or under grow lights and just kind of see what happens.
Sounds good. Thanks so much.
Yep.
Have a great day.
Yep. Black-eyed Susans are fantastic. You don't find too many things. There are several members of the sunflower family that bloom for extended periods of time, and they are really striking. Let's go to Margaret's yard. Margaret, how are you?
Hi. Thank you very much for your show.
Sure.
I live in Kirkwood, and I live out in the woods, and I have lots of trees, especially oak ones. Now that the fall has come, all the leaves are on the ground, and underneath all the leaves are ground cover. Should I blow that ground cover off of the leaves, off of the ground cover, or should I? Can I leave it there?
If it gets too deep, it could be problematic. Is this evergreen ground cover, or is this, you know, herbaceous type ground cover?
This is myrtle ivy.
Yeah. So in other words, they're evergreens. I mean, for them.
Yeah.
If the leaves, the fallen leaves get too deep, it's going to be, you know, trouble for them. So ultimately, you know, and the unfortunate thing with oak leaves, they're not like maple. They don't break down. They could stay there for, you know, for years. So historically, what have you actually done?
Done both.
So I would say, I don't know, is this really hilly, the area that you live in?
Not. A little bit, but not bad.
Okay. What I would do is probably, you know, contact the lawn service and ask them if they have a mulching mower and just have all the leaves, you know, have them mow them.
Mulch them over the ground cover?
Yeah. I would say, you know, as long as, you know, just chop the leaves up, that'll help them break down. Then, you know, actually help, you know, the soil as they percolate down into the soil. But just to leave them whole, that could be real trouble.
What trouble?
As far as too much humidity, too much moisture, and then ultimately, you know, if they're so deep, they're not going to go anyplace, and then there's not going to be any sun that hits your, you know, your periwinkle or your vinca minor or your ivies, and then that's going to lead to their decline.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
Have a nice day.
Yep, you too. Yeah, it's you know, it could be, it might, you may be fine because you said you've done it both ways, and it's you just don't know what's going to happen as a result of it, and especially with the ivies, because a lot of times we're finding out as the ivies ground covers, as they age and mature, they start elongating. So in other words, they get big stretches of just stem with no leaves and no foliage on them at all, and there's only foliage at the end. So all those kind of scenarios will play a role on, you know, the aesthetic value. Let's go to Ella's yard. Hi, Ella.
Yes. I'm calling in regards to the woman who had a problem with a hole by her landscaping brick.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Okay. This may not be the problem. We had yellow jackets that had made a nest.
Wow.
So it was quite bigger than you would think for the size of the hornets, but she might look at that. It's too cold for them to bother now, but you
right.
know, in the spring they might come back.
Right.
So
I mean,
that's
yeah.
my comment. Okay. Thank you.
Sure. That's
mm-hmm.
you know,
bye.
That in kind of, you know, insight. The size of the hole, I wouldn't have thought yellow jackets, but that's something that certainly, you know, does make holes into the ground. There's no getting around it. And now let's go over to John's yard. Hi, John.
Hi. I love your show. I had a question about, I have a very thick euonymus growing up a tree,
mm-hmm.
and I'm wondering if that is will harm my tree at all.
The
you know,
only
it's very, very thick vine,
right?
And it's going all the way up the tree. I'm wondering if I should remove it, if it's hurting the tree at all.
It doesn't hurt the tree bark. It doesn't. The only time it becomes problematic as it's climbing the trunk, if it starts going out over the branches, then it can potentially be problematic by overshadowing where the leaves, you know, the foliage buds are. That's where the trouble comes. But just climbing the tree per se is not, you know, not that much. It's not a problem.
Is it robbing the tree of water?
No, not at all. Water goes up in the interior, underneath the bark. So, there's no water there. Any kind of water would just be running down the outside of the trunk, and the tree does not absorb water from the bark inside.
Uh-huh.
So the water
okay.
that a tree has only comes from the ground and then goes up through the veins of the vascular system of the tree to the, you know, to the branches, to the foliage, or to fruit, or whatever.
But they're not like in competition with, you know, with the moisture. You know, if there's a drought going on, You know, are they in competition with each other?
No, not at all.
Not at all.
Oh, okay. All right, so I don't have to worry about it.
No, some people will, you know, they just don't like the stuff climbing the tree trunk, but it doesn't really hurt, you know, hurt the tree whatsoever. I mean, you can go to Europe, you can see trees that are pretty darn old, let's say 100 plus years, that have different kinds of evergreen ground covers, basically growing the trunks, and you can see it here too. It doesn't really, you know, cause any problem.
Yeah, I've actually seen, I do landscaping, and I've actually seen regular ivy like cascading down from trees,
right,
with flowers on them, you know, like mature ivy and with flowers on them,
sure.
You know, and I always wondered if that hurts the tree or not.
No.
So just a question.
Okay, great.
Okay, yeah. Thank you very much.
Sure, my pleasure. Yeah, again, the only time it becomes trouble is when the, you know, whatever it is that's climbing the trunk goes out over the branches and starts growing over the end of the branches and prevents foliage from being formed. That's where trouble comes. So let's see. Let's go to Jackie's yard. Hi, Jackie.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I have planted several emerald green arborvitaes, and I was hoping that they would, the label said they grow fast. Well, these were babies like 12, 16 inches tall when I put them in. They're not really that much bigger now, and if they've been in the ground for 2 years. Am I supposed to be fertilizing them, or are they really slower growers than what the label says?
Well, they're fast growing in relationship to other trees, but for the most part, you know, anything that small, it's going to take a couple years for them to get the root system established, and then once that happens, it's probably going to be the 3 to 5 year mark. Then you could probably anticipate any place between 6 and 12 inches of new growth per year, but it's not going to be something that's going to be boom. It won't explode in growth.
I was hoping to have a privacy screen back there, but of 8 to 10 feet. But yeah. I guess that's going to be a long time.
Yes, it will. to be honest.
And I ask another question about boxwood. We have a round boxwood that's getting pretty big, and I keep trimming it back every year. And my husband, and it's a round one, about 4.5 feet tall, maybe at least.
Mm-hmm.
And nice and fat, nice and round. I was wanting to minimize the size. I know the interior does not have leaves. So I was wondering if I gave it a severe cut in the spring and it's bare, just about, probably, will leaves start to form again?
Well, I always tell people don't do that, but there was a caller in the previous hour that said she had taken like a 4-foot-high boxwood and cut it down to a foot, basically just... And she said it leafed out fine.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, but I don't recommend it. But
I might chance it, though.
Exactly. That's what she did, because I had told her, you know, 6 months ago or something not to do it, and she did it anyway, which I can't believe she did. But
well, I think I'll disobey you.
Yes, exactly.
Because it's getting a little too big for where it is.
Right.
I'll chance it. Okay.
Sounds perfect.
If nothing else, I'll plant another one.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, if you do have some tulips or daffodil bulbs or something, you're probably not going to get around to planting them. What you can do is put them in pots with potting mix and, you know, force those bulbs. I forget where we were the other day, but they had a whole bunch of tulips. And this wasn't a nursery or anything like that. They had a bunch of tulips that they were forcing, you know, on the counters. So it was just kind of neat to see. But you can still do that with your extra bulbs that you don't want to plant. And amaryllis, of course, are going to be fantastic. You can get them. If you got some that you've had in previous years and foliage is still there, just cut the foliage off and then just leave them sit, you know, for a couple weeks. Then you'll start to see the flower stalk come shooting up out of the center. Let's head over to Jason's yard, and he lives in Clayton. Hi, Jason.
Hey, Mike, I had a friend up north send some castor seeds. Like, it looks like a bean, and it's going to end up to be a big, beautiful plant, I hope, with nice flowers. So do they do well down here, and can I start those somehow so I've got a shot at getting them as big as they can get this year? Can I start them inside, or
if you can start them inside, it's probably not worth the effort. But castor beans, I mean, I've seen some that can get like 12 feet high. I've got castor bean seeds, and mine usually just get about, let's say maybe 8 feet high. They're not spectacular as far as, necessarily the flowers go, but with the foliage and the combination of flowers and everything else, they are very striking for sure.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah. So you don't have to start them inside. You can. It's just that if you do start them and they do germinate and sprout, ultimately you got to get them out into the ground. I just plant mine straight into pots or into the ground myself. So it's just personal choice.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
Yep. And now let's go over to Ann's yard. Hi, Ann.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
How are you?
Very good.
You might have addressed this already. I couldn't listen earlier, had an appointment. But is it too late to do a lot of trimming on your shrubbery?
Not necessarily. It just depends upon the type. So, I mean.
Well, I've got boxwood, doesn't need a whole lot. Holly, roses, some knockout roses.
I would say with your roses, go ahead and do it. With the evergreens, I would kind of have a tendency to probably, wait until we're coming out of wintertime, sometime around Valentine's Day, to prune those.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for our show.
Sure. My pleasure. Yeah,
have
with the roses,
day.
I mean, there's not a problem, pruning those at all. Just the broadleaf evergreens, if you prune them, we have a severe winter, then you're going to get potentially more damage as a result of that. So. Thanks,
yeah.
Ann. And Dean, can you do it kind of quickly?
Yes. I have a female ginkgo tree.
Ooh.
It was purchased from a reputable nursery over on Bear Station. And they hoped it was a male, but obviously not a guarantee. It is about maybe 5 or 6 inches diameter of the trunk now. I've had it in the ground about 20 years, and it's starting to produce a lot of seeds.
Yuck.
Any thoughts? It's not a real bother right now, but I'm just thinking, should I just cut my losses and replace it with something before it gets too big?
To be honest with you, I probably would, because maybe you haven't been, extremely about these fruits, but the fruits on the ginkgo trees can really have some nasty smells. So it's not only just producing the seed, it's just the dog smell that's really horrible.
Yeah, it is a non-pleasant smell, that's for sure.
Right. And so I would say, if you want to kind of live with it, that's fine. But if it's in close proximity or any place you walk by, you know what it's like. It's just absolutely horrible. So my tendency would be to say start over.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm going.
Yeah.
There's not any place that would want a female ginkgo, is there? It would be transplantable. It'd be hard, but it could be done.
Yeah, I would not think so.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know some, nature place or something out in the woods, they'd say, we need to have a few female ginkgos preserved.
Not that I've ever heard of.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you get lucky.
Yeah, true.
It's not always good.
Yeah, that's surprising that they, they couldn't guarantee it, because usually they will.
Yeah, that's what they said. The guy that sold it to me was a pretty good horticulturist. Wow. And he said,
thanks, Dean. We got to run. So, Mike Miller, KMR's Garden Hotline. See you next week.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.